And good afternoon, and welcome to Angel Answers. I'm your host, Amy Toy. Today's guest is an inspirational author and independent publisher. But before I introduce today's guest, I have a few announcements on the upcoming shows. Next week, on the 21st, I will have Meadow Lynn. We'll be discussing her cookbook, which she co-authored with Denise Lynn, entitled The Mystic Cookbook, The Secret of Alchemy of Food. And then on the 28th, I have Betty M. Marcoux, who will be coming in, and she will be our featured guest about her what she does. And the 4th, we will have Michael Moon. He will be here discussing his meditation CDs, Deep Peace, and Deep Song. And then the 11th, I have author John Backman, and he will be educating us on his book, Why Can't We Talk? Christian Wisdom on Dialogue as a Habit. And this author that I'm about to introduce, an independent publisher, he has written some inspirational books and influential books on The Course in Miracles. He has written Understanding A Course in Miracles, The History, Message, and Legacy of Spiritual Path for Today, The Way of Forgiveness, Letting Go, Easing Stress, and Building Strength, and, of course, the book that we're probably going to be focusing on today, Living with Miracles, A Common Sense Guide to A Course in Miracles. He also published Gary Raynard's best-selling book, The Disappearance of the Universe, and he is also the founder of Fearless Books. Welcome, Patrick. How are you today?
I've been a little better, but a touch of the flu right now, but other than that, good enough.
Good enough, yes. Yes. Patrick, you seem to, your writing style is citing sources. What is your background with your writing? Give us a little taste of what you've done in the past that led you up to this path of finding the Course.
Well, I started out many years ago, and I won't say how many, as an investigative journalist.
Okay.
And I was focusing on environmental issues. And I look back on that as my time of trying to figure out who was wrong and how to blame them for everything. And I was sort of trained in the investigative style of, you know, trust no one and follow the money and so forth and so on. But I discovered pretty quickly that I really didn't have the stomach for it. Mm-hmm. And it just something felt off about it. So I kind of retreated from that. I went into graphic design and typography, all of which proved very valuable later when I became a publisher. And then in my early 30s, I became seriously ill with what was later diagnosed as chronic fatigue syndrome. Mm-hmm. And during the course of that, I discovered A Course in Miracles and started to go through a lot of personal changes as a result. Mm-hmm. And as I came out of that illness after 7 years, I returned to journalism, but I started doing what I call the journalism of consciousness, mm-hmm. which is writing about psychology, spirituality, metaphysics, wisdom traditions. I spent about a decade working for Yoga Journal. I was a senior writer for Yoga Journal all through the 90s. Wrote a lot for a magazine published in North Carolina called The Sun, and I still write for them occasionally. And then later came to start doing books. My first book about a course called Understanding A Course in Miracles was basically a journalistic report. No one had ever really summarized the history of the course, mm-hmm. and talked to the critics as well as the teachers. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of just a factual overview for people. Mm-hmm. Because the course is so widely misunderstood. Mm-hmm. And then more recently, I followed that up with Living with Miracles, which is the book that's focused more on how do you do the course?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? What is it like to go through it? It's still journalism in the sense that I interviewed many, many people about their experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's a little less about the course and more about the experience of learning with the Course.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go a little bit into what I'm going to do is I'm going to break it up a little bit and take a little bit from understanding the Course, because I want my listeners to kind of get a feel for what is the Course in Miracles. So, Patrick, what is the Course in Miracles? What does it compose of? What is it, you know, comprised of and all that stuff? What is the Course exactly, for those who don't know what it is?
The Course is a modern spiritual teaching. Mm-hmm. It's self-contained in one book of three volumes. The three volumes are a text, a workbook of 365 daily lessons, and a brief manual for teachers. It's written in Christian language, mm-hmm. but it overturns almost all the major conventional points of Christianity. It's very metaphysical, mm-hmm. and it's strongly focused on the practice of forgiveness, mm-hmm. which it takes much further than most people's common understanding of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. The Course has kind of mystical origins. It was written down by two Columbia University psychologists in the mid-60s. Mm-hmm. One of them, Helen Schuckman, heard a voice in her head, which she found quite disturbing.
I would too.
And she'd actually heard this voice for some years before the Course. And one day she heard the voice say, "This is a Course in Miracles. Please take notes." Mm-hmm. She called up her colleague, actually her boss, Bill Thetford, and said, "It's finally happened. I'm going crazy. What do I do now?" Mm-hmm. And Bill suggested that she take down the notes that the voice wanted to give her and see if they made any sense, and if they didn't, they would throw them away and not pay any attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
So she took the first couple days' notes, they looked them over, decided it was worth, you know, to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And she did it for 7 years. Writing down something almost daily. It's sometimes said that the Course was channeled, but that's
mm-hmm.
not really accurate.
Mm-hmm.
The way Helen described the process was more like almost any writer's creative process. Words formed in her head and she wrote them down.
Right.
She didn't hear a voice. She didn't go into a trance.
Mm-hmm.
What was unusual was that she was not comfortable with anything the Course said,
mm-hmm.
and that remained true to the end of her life. She once said that the irony of her life was that she didn't understand her own life's work.
Mm.
She didn't believe in her own life's work. The voice that she heard in her head clearly identified itself as Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
which made her even more uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have copies of her unpublished autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
She never refers to the voice as Jesus. She just calls it the voice.
Yeah.
And at one point even calls it the top sergeant. which shows something about her relationship to it.
Mm-hmm.
She was often so upset with what she was writing down that she had to rely on Bill, her boss, to calm her down. And I interviewed Bill once before his death, and he told me that one of the things that slowed down the transcription of the Course was Helen was reading from shorthand notes, and he was typing.
Uh-huh.
He said, "I was often typing with one hand because I had to have the other hand on Helen to calm her down. Get so upset by what she was reading back
mm-hmm.
in her notes and constantly afraid she was losing her mind and so forth." It's kind of difficult to summarize quickly what the Course says. It is it's a very unusual blend of Christian language,
mm-hmm.
Western psychology, strongly rooted in Freudianism,
mm-hmm.
and Eastern metaphysics. So it basically says that the the world we see around us is illusory.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it not our highest reality, it's not our reality at all. Just as it said in Buddhism and the Vedanta, we live in a dream, we live in an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
But the Course's way out of the illusion is not meditation or any kind of ritual, it's forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's forgiveness, I would say, tuned up to a very high frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. To the point where you're forgiving anything and everything you see, good and bad, all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what the workbook of 365 daily lessons essentially trains you to do.
Mm-hmm.
So in short, there's not ever been anything like the Course. Most spiritual teachings are passed down,
mm-hmm.
From various sources. Who knows how many people wrote the Bible?
Mm-hmm.
They're full of contradictions. Mm-hmm. There are many sources in any particular religion. The Course is, as I said, self-contained.
Mm-hmm.
It's all there is to it. There is not a church behind it.
Mm-hmm.
It's often called a self-study course, even though almost all students get themselves into a group sooner or later simply because it's so difficult to do by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's more or less the story of the Course.
Yeah, and going back to Helen and Bill for a second, the authors or whoever, the inspirational, they had very different, after they had separated from after the Course was published, they had very two contrasting deaths. Bill was more at ease with himself, had been free. There was you'd recount the story, which I've heard from John Mundy, and then Helen, she went through a horrible death. Do you want to explain a little bit about that? I thought that was an interesting contrast with both the authors, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, one of the ironies of the Course is that Helen never accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
She, near the end of her life, she told a friend, I know the Course is true, but I don't believe it. That's a very interesting thing to say.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah, it's interesting how there's a contrast. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Right, to make the confession that you know something is true, but you're simply not going to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And she died, actually, of pancreatic cancer, which is often associated with psychotic episodes. And so, yeah, her last, I think, year and a half to 2 years were very difficult. And in fact, she was kind of a difficult person before that. Ken Wapnick, who's sort of the primary philosopher of the Course and who knew Helen very well, said that she's the perfect example of the split mind that the Course said, the Course says we all suffer from.
Mm-hmm.
Just in Helen, it was very dramatic. There was a part of her mind that was upset with the world, was afraid of the world, was suspicious of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a part of her mind that could clearly hear the Course and take it down with relatively little distortion and make sure it got recorded.
Mm-hmm.
There are many places in the Course, even though it has been edited for a general audience, there are places in the Course where the personal nature of the communication between the voice that Helen heard and Helen herself is quite clear. And one of the things that the voice told her was that she wasn't ready to be doing what she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But she had agreed long, long ago, and now was the time.
Hmm.
Bill, now part of the intrigue was that Bill and Helen worked together at the psychology department of Columbia University. They were constantly in these, departmental battles. They were at each other's throat. A complication was that Helen had a crush on Bill. He was gay and 14 years older. So there was all kinds of difficult psychological struggles going on between them. And in fact, they never really settled their arguments either. Bill moved to California and actually began to study the course quite intently, and everyone who knew him remarked on how much he changed. He changed from being a kind of uptight, reserved, secretive academic to becoming a much more open and giving person. And although he studied the course regularly and went to study groups, he never tried to lead them. He tended to sit in the back of the room and just listen to people. And on the last day of his life, he told a friend that he felt that he was free because he'd forgiven everyone. And this friend says, "Even Helen, you forgave even Helen?" Mm-hmm. And he laughed and said, "Helen was the reason I had to learn forgiveness." And then within a few hours, he dropped dead of a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And this friend, Judy Scott, she was actually the publisher of the course, said she felt that it happened that way. He'd always had heart trouble, so it wasn't a big surprise, but she felt it happened that way because he completed his work and truly was at peace and could peacefully depart in a way that was just totally different than what Helen did. And a very interesting thing about this, there have been other people throughout history who have channeled or written down important spiritual works, like Jane Roberts with Seth and so forth. Helen is almost unique. In fact, as far as I know, she is unique in being the only channel or scribe of such a great teaching who remained opposed to it throughout her life. And what I mean by this, she remained emotionally opposed to it. She could acknowledge that it was wise and true. Mm-hmm. She just didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, really.
The Course itself makes that point many times, that free will means that you decide whether or not to forgive. Mm-hmm. You decide, you know, how much to suffer. Mm-hmm. You decide whether to live in reality or not. Mm-hmm. And everyone has that choice. And even Helen, who took on this enormous task of setting down this teaching, had that choice, and she made the choice she wanted to. Bill made a different choice.
Exactly. Yeah, that's when I was reading that. I thought that was a different contrast with the two, you know, two authors here. And what I find interesting with the course myself, you term, I think you use the spiritual, not religious group. I don't want to say labels, but why do you think they? Why do you think that group? Because I was, you know, I was brought up Catholic, but I'm more. I've always been a seeker, and I think you have been too. Why do you think the course appeals to that group setting, that group of people?
I think the main reason is that it offers a genuine spiritual discipline, a real thing that you can do. Mm-hmm. You know, you can sit down with a workbook on day one and do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Without being told to, without it being required of you. You can also quit it at any time. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be excommunicated or looked upon. In fact, there are many, many stories of people who begin the course, get stuck, mm-hmm. put it on their shelf for 20 years, and 20 years later they start it again mm-hmm. because they're ready. Mm-hmm. So the trend toward people saying that they're spiritual but not religious has been going on now for 20, 25 years in our culture, and I think it's because people have real spiritual needs and instincts mm-hmm. that the mainstream churches increasingly don't address. Mm-hmm. You know, people are told what to believe, or they're told what they should join, or they're told what they should not do. But they don't it doesn't change their lives. It doesn't engage them. It doesn't, in a sense, it doesn't deliver on what it should.
Mm-hmm.
And so more and more people have gotten disaffected with religion, but they still have that spiritual instinct.
Mm-hmm.
And in our culture, you know, a lot of people turn to Zen because it also offers a discipline. The difference is that with Zen, you can read about it and do it on your own, but you pretty much do have to join a sect or at least a teaching group or find a teacher to really do it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still sort of a cultural identification you have to make.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the course is, it stands alone by itself. It's totally elective. It's called A Course in Miracles because Bill and Helen were academics. And Helen often said that the content of the course was not her own, but the style was.
Mm-hmm.
She was an academic, so she wrote a curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it's intended, as a curriculum. It calls itself a mind training, not a religion.
Mm-hmm.
And in my experience, one of the hardest things to understand about the course and why really one of the main reasons I wrote Living with Miracles is to help people understand that all the religious language is a metaphor.
Yeah.
Or retraining your mind.
Mm-hmm.
The course talks about learning to listen to the Holy Spirit. It doesn't mean there's a spirit hovering in the air above your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to tell you what to do. It means there is a part of your own mind that is wiser than the ego part of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And through following this discipline of forgiveness, you can learn to listen to that wiser part of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
People do get hung up on the religious language and sometimes mistake the course for a religion. There are a number of conservative Christians who not only regard the course as a alternative religion, but a dangerous one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in part because they don't understand that it's not a religion at all. It's a technique. It's what you might call a spiritual technology.
Mm-hmm.
And if it works for you, you can use it.
Right.
It's worked for many people and changed their lives. If it doesn't work for you, you can put it down and do something else. So I think that's what appeals to people who call themselves spiritual but not religious, that they can get a real discipline, a very inspiring, different way to look at the world,
mm-hmm.
but they don't have to join anything, they don't have to confess, they don't have to say they're sinners, so on and so forth.
Yes. And you also talk about people in addictions. It's like graduate work for the addictive personality. You want to explain that a little bit, the graduate work? I mean, I know a lot of 12-step people would say there's no graduation, but what do you think?
Actually, I'm actually working with a writer right now who's a 12-step veteran and a sponsor.
Ah.
And he's doing a book linking the 12 steps to the course. And talking about that, I wasn't the one who originated. It's people who have come out of the 12-step tradition,
mm-hmm.
been done the course, who have referred to the course as graduate work for the 12 steps.
Mm-hmm.
What it basically means, I mean, why that idea has come about is that many, many course students have a 12-step background.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a very popular transition that people make.
Mm-hmm.
And I think why it works is that even though 12 steps has been a very healing path for many, many people, and it in itself is a spiritual technology that takes a step away from conventional religion,
mm-hmm.
but it still has some elements of what I would say old Christianity embedded in it.
Mm-hmm.
One is the idea that once an addict, always an addict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the sense of once a sinner, always a sinner. Well, the 12 steps change that. It doesn't say you're a sinner, but says that if you're an addict, you will always be an addict.
Mm-hmm.
You must always do certain things about it.
Mm-hmm.
course, would both agree and disagree. It says there is no sin.
Mm-hmm.
People make mistakes.
Yes.
Those mistakes can be very costly and damaging. Mm-hmm. But no one is a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
And it would say that the only thing that we're addicted to, and it's a big thing, is the idea that the world is real.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big addiction.
Mm-hmm.
But it also says that anything and everything can be forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
So from the Course point of view, whether or not you're an addict is just beside the point.
Mm-hmm.
The point is to release and let go of everything you see so that you can hear this wiser voice within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that has just proven inspiring and useful to a number of people who've come through the 12-step
mm-hmm.
tradition. Not necessarily looking for something else,
mm-hmm.
but finding in the Course something that seems to take them on a next step that they didn't even know existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that, because if you go to any 12-step program, it's like go to meetings, which is great, but you want to surpass that. If you've gone through the 12 steps, we'll go through it again. I think the Course does offer you something to propel you forward. It, like you said, that spiritual need we have inside. You know, and I agree with that totally.
And the Course also issues a strong warning against following any and all rituals, because it basically says that any kind of ritual sort of enslaves you to the world and makes you think that, that if you do these certain things in the world over and over and over again, that you'll be saved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the church has a different kind of saving than the 12 steps do.
Mm-hmm.
But the 12 steps form of salvation is you go to meetings every day,
mm-hmm.
you know, or every week, or you always go to meetings.
Yeah, and, really, yeah. That's
right, and you have to because you're an addict.
Mm-hmm.
And the Course, on the other hand, says, no, you're a child of God, and you've forgotten that.
Mm-hmm.
And to get back to your true, free, liberated nature, you need to let go of this world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people, one thing that can happen with the Course, particularly in the early stages, is a kind of spacing out.
Yes.
People get onto this idea of, oh, I just have to let go of everything and just decide nothing's real and I don't have to worry about anything. That can actually be a valuable early learning stage, but you have to get over it.
It's true. It's actually true. Yes.
Sometimes it's good to space out on this world.
Yes.
But then you have to get back to a more practical basis. And what the Course is really about is has to do with the lesson that says anger is never justified.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it's really urging is that you learn how to relate to the everyday world with no trace of anger.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, to the extent that you can do that or that you can begin to do that, you will hear this deeper, wiser voice in your mind, which the Course calls the Holy Spirit, which will tell you better things to do than the normal ego voice will tell you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the mind training comes in. You're literally training your own mind to listen to a different part of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that you can do that, your life will go easier. The Course does refer to what it calls the real world,
mm-hmm.
which is a state of being in which everything is forgiven. And it makes some very poetic allusions to what that world is like.
Mm-hmm.
But it says that even that so-called real world is not the reality of God.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can, through forgiveness, you can get yourself to the real world, or to a world that's more real than the ordinary one. But it says the last step is taken by God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not quite clear what that means, but it's, I think when you got there, you would know.
Yeah, you just know what you know. How do we get to forgiveness? Is it an intention that we put out there, or does it just happen all the time?
Well, there are 365 daily lessons and over 1,200 total pages to the course.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because forgiveness is so difficult.
Yes, it is. Yes, you've been doing that to my family members. Yes.
No, there's no simple key to it. That it's why the course exists.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that's most important to understand is from the course point of view, forgiveness is not about anything that anybody else did.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiveness is about what you are doing with your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiveness is about letting go of your own patterns of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And letting go of your projections in a psychological sense. The course goes so far as to say that the entire world that you see is the contents of your mind projected outward.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that you see out there that you think is disturbing,
mm-hmm,
or horrifying or just not right needs forgiveness, but only because it originated in your mind. So you're always forgiving yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're always letting go of your own patterns of thought. One of the controversial messages of the course is at one point it says, seek not to change the world, but to change your mind about it.
Mm-hmm.
And people tend to think that means, oh, well, I shouldn't be involved in politics or any social movements, or I shouldn't try to do anything to change anything, or I should just sit in my room.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
And not act.
I don't know. Yeah.
What it really means is get your priorities straight. If you change your mind about the world, you will see the world change. That's how it works. But that's very difficult to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason the course exists as such an intense training is exactly because it's so difficult. And there's often a sense of making 10 steps forward and 9 steps back.
Mm-hmm.
The old habits of condemnation and anger and revenge seem to have a way of coming back at us,
mm-hmm,
even with some practice in forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, and when I say time, I mean for me 30 years, nearly 30 years, what happens is that it's not that you never get angry. It's not that you never get pissed off. It's not that you don't ever want to get even with someone.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
But the frequency with which that happens decreases dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the intensity with which it happens decreases dramatically. And you get more and more of the capacity to, instead of getting angry and then doing something about it, you know, to get even or set somebody straight, you develop more of the capacity to say, wow, I'm really angry.
Mm-hmm.
What should I do about this? And in many, many spiritual traditions, this is sort of the key to the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting that capacity to pause, see what you're doing, and make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than acting automatically.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the philosophical tradition of Stoicism. In our culture, when we hear that someone is Stoic, we think, well, they don't have feelings, or they're repressing their feelings. What Stoicism really meant was the capacity to act on emotions by choice. If you felt angry, you first recognized your anger, and then you made a decision. Do I act on it or not?
Mm-hmm.
And that decision was based on, will it serve?
Mm-hmm.
Will it serve others and myself and the world to act on this anger or not to act on it?
Mm-hmm.
That's true Stoicism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true, it's very much what the Course is teaching. It's what Zen teaches. It's the kind of capacity that's at the heart of many spiritual traditions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is. I think that that's very true. How do you get past the language of the Course? Like, there's the ego. What is the ego, according to the Course?
According to the Course, the ego, it's not quite the same as the classical definition. which was devised by Freud. In Freudian terms, the ego is the sense of self that we necessarily develop to deal with the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's constantly at battle with the superego, or the high moral part of the mind, and the id, or the instinctive base, physically driven part of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
The Course talks about the ego, but it never talks about the id or the superego. It talks about the ego as an entirely false sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is very similar to Buddhism and Hinduism, which talks about the false self.
Mm-hmm.
In different language, but basically the same idea. The Course says that the ego is a false identification with fear.
Mm.
Whenever you're afraid, to any extent, you're following the dictates of the ego.
Mm-hmm.
That's why one of the core lessons is there is nothing to fear. If you're acting from that basis, you will not be acting egotistically.
Mm-hmm.
Or egocentrically. But it's important to understand that whereas in typical psychology, the ego is an important thing to take care of. In other words, therapy is essentially ego management.
Mm-hmm.
How do we all have egos, and we're all sensitive, and we all get hurt, so we go into therapy to learn how to get our egos to work together. and maybe moderate the most extreme parts of the ego,
mm-hmm.
most extreme antisocial parts. the limit of this kind of psychology was shown in a very famous quote by Freud himself, who once wrote to one of his patients that the whole aim of psychotherapy was to reduce, I can't remember the words exactly, but he said something like to reduce your hysteria to common misery. In other words, the farthest that Freud thought people could get. They could learn how to live in society and have and control their urges and sort of settle down to common misery.
Mm-hmm.
The Course says, excuse me, the ego is not you at all.
Mm-hmm.
You, the real you, is something else entirely.
Mm-hmm.
The real you is not even in your body.
Mm-hmm.
The real you is your mind. And your mind, which is the same as everyone else's mind, and that's a particularly difficult thing to grasp,
mm-hmm.
creates the body, the world of matter, and everything else that you see. So when you forgive and let go and release the ego, you're letting go of the world.
Mm-hmm.
A very frightening proposition.
Mm-hmm.
The world is all that all of us know.
Mm-hmm.
Or so it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens over time with the Course Forgiveness Discipline is, it's not that, you know, the world goes away in a blinding flash of light. Although it could. But it's more that you're, what I would call people's tendency to grip the world,
mm-hmm.
relaxes. And you become a little more a little more objective,
mm-hmm.
and a little more amused by everything that happens. Again, Ken Wapnick, one of the probably the greatest teacher of the Course alive right now. Almost every time people say, you know, well, to him, well, I know the world isn't real and so forth, but what do I do about this? And they bring up some you know, horrible circumstance in their lives that they can't deal with. And again and again, he says, just don't take it so seriously. And I think what he means by that, what that means to me is, don't take it with anger. Because
mm-hmm.
usually when we take something seriously, we're angry about it.
Yes.
And
true.
We think we've got to do something and things have to be changed and somebody's got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And what the Course is saying is, no, you're angry about illusions. You're angry about something going on in your mind that you've thrown out of your mind in an attempt to not be responsible for it. And the real solution to the problem is not to fix it, but to say, this is a mistake, it came from my mind, and there must be a better way to look at this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the essence of the Course process,
mm-hmm.
taking a different look, sort of just calming down and taking a different look at the way things seem to be.
And is that what they call term a miracle?
Yeah, the Course calls the miracle many things, but its basic definition is a shift in perception. And it is not what most people usually think of as a miracle, as a sudden healing or the appearance of Jesus' face on a slice of bread, a sudden change for the better or winning the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
Any of those things might happen with a shift of perception, but they're not the point. In the Course view, the miracle is, in a very simple way, what the Course is calling a miracle is changing your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever wished someone would change their mind or struggle with changing your own, you know it's a miracle.
Yes, that's true.
And from that change of mind, from truly seeing things differently, yes, miraculous, what we would normally think of as miraculous events can occur.
Mm-hmm.
But the Course would say, that's only because you changed your mind about it. You changed in your mind, so it changed out there.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no out there in reality. It's all in your mind.
Yeah, you mentioned something about miracles are always around us in the book. You know, you talk about that, but if we they're there, but sometimes we don't want to access them. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, the course says that the miracle or the change in perception is always available.
Mm-hmm.
You can always do it. You can always see things differently. But by and large, we choose not to. We're either satisfied with the way things are or highly dissatisfied, but convinced that things can't be changed.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're convinced that things can't be changed, we're either unfamiliar with changing our mind
yeah.
or actively resisting it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of getting through the chronic fatigue syndrome, the serious illness that I had many years ago, I learned a lot about my addiction to anger and how that addiction to anger had caused my immune system to collapse. And I was angry about a world that I thought could not be changed.
Mm-hmm.
And everything I'd ever done to change it had not worked. And it wasn't fair. And it was my parents' fault. And it was the world's fault. And it was the fault of anybody but me.
Yes.
And as I studied the course and went through its workbook, I went through this step-by-step process, often very upsetting and difficult, of realizing, no, I did this, and I did that, and I did that, and I made that problem be the way it is. And I'm angry about this situation, and I want it to stay that way so I can stay angry about it. Step by step, the course undoes all that.
Yes, it's an undoing process, really.
Yes.
You
and
learned. Yes.
It can be very upsetting. There are countless cases of people not just throwing away their copy of the course, but of ritually burning it, of it to shreds.
I've heard of that. My friend threw it against the wall one time.
Oh, yeah. I have almost all my historical copies of the course. I have about 6 or 7 copies, and including the one with the broken spine that came from a collision with the wall. My favorite was the guy who wrote to me and said that he had destroyed 6 copies of the course. And he said, the 7th one is on my nightstand and I can't get rid of it. And it shows the very strange power of the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, it's just a book. It has no magical powers embedded in its binding or anything. But it introduces you to a discipline that if it works for you, and it certainly doesn't work for everyone,
right?
It's genuinely healing.
Mm-hmm.
And healing is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people think, oh, yeah, I want to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Not if it means giving up their favorite grievances,
mm-hmm.
their favorite opinions, their attachments, their ideas about, you know, what's real or how things should be.
Mm-hmm.
If healing involves giving up all that, they don't really want healing.
Mm-hmm.
What they mean when they say that they want to be healed is, I wish things would change in just the ways I want them to.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ego voice,
mm-hmm.
Trying to manage the world,
mm-hmm.
manage and fix the world. And what the course says that what the ego does is uh, accuse the world of being the source of all its problems, mm-hmm. and then set about solving all those problems with one goal, which is not to solve them, but to keep them.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes up with all kinds of inefficient strategies to fix this and that and that and that. And even if it does manage to fix one thing, then guess what? A new problem pops up to take its place. Because the ego part of the mind, the fear-driven part of the mind, wants problems.
Mm-hmm.
Wants to be struggling. Wants to feel like it's in control, while in fact it has no control.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this is a big part of the addictive mind.
Mm-hmm.
Most people in 12 steps have recognized that they're control freaks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They were always trying to fix things, and they were always going to be on top of it just the next second.
Mm-hmm.
And a key part of beginning the recovery process is giving that up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Course, you know, would agree with that necessity, but again, it takes it much farther.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just have to give up the controlling part of your mind. You have to give up all your fears, all your angers.
Mm-hmm.
You have to let what he calls the Holy Spirit, the loving part of the mind, completely take over for you.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And finally, what is meant by the atonement? Why do we need the atonement?
The atonement is in a very real sense, it's the acceptance of that loving part of the mind as the only mind there is.
Mm-hmm.
It's the recognition that our normal sense of self, the ego, is a total falsehood.
Mm-hmm.
And you become willing to join with what is real, which is that voice of love at all times.
Mm-hmm.
It's closely identified with what the Course calls the holy instant,
mm-hmm.
which is a moment of joining between people when they realize that they have no separate interest. That's also the atonement. This idea is in other traditions. In Zen, for instance, there's what's called kensho, or a moment of enlightenment, which you suddenly see how things are. And the important thing to understand is that some people think that, you know, becoming enlightened means seeing everything, and your life is a breeze, and nothing's ever difficult again, and you're perfectly healthy, and everything gets fixed. In fact, the Course refers to the holy instant because it's acknowledging that this, for virtually everyone, it's just going to happen like an instant at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then it will seem to be gone. You'll suddenly realize that you're one with all humanity.
Mm-hmm.
You'll suddenly realize that for a moment you have no fear. For a moment, the material world dissolves.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything kind of grinds back into place.
Mm-hmm.
But you're changed. And so, in fact, most people will have, you know, serial experiences of atonement.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes think of it as attunement. You're attuning to what's real.
Mm-hmm.
Like you dial up and you hit that frequency, and you can't hold on to it, but you get it for an instant, what the Course calls the holy instant.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that you then lose it, but in fact you've been changed.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you will go forth through ordinary life a little less angry,
mm-hmm.
a little less separated, a little less unhappy. The Course often, you know, makes a point that you can make all these changes instantly and totally, if you just would. Most of us, in fact, no one I know, can in fact do that. Mm-hmm. We do have to go through an evolution.
Right.
And the Course acknowledges that when it has 365 lessons in order. It's acknowledging that, yes, there is a process.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enlightenment. It's not just stepping over a line and being completely changed all at once forever. There is a very interesting part in the Course where it addresses the question of, you know, if we're not here, if this isn't true, if we're living out a life of illusion, and our reality is with God and with eternal love, how could this ever happen?
Mm-hmm.
How could we? Why are we in a dream? How could it happen that we'd be in a dream if that's not our natural state? And the Course says, when you understand that, it will disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason you don't understand that yet is you don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
You want the world.
Right.
And when you truly don't want the world, it won't be there. That's where the title of Gary Renard's book came from, The Disappearance of the Universe. The Disappearance of the Universe comes with total forgiveness.
Yeah, I'm going to have to read that book. Well, Patrick, we're getting short of time. Where can people find you and your wonderful, you know, the Course and your explanations further? Where people can find you? And
I have a big section of Course resources on my website, which is fearlessbooks.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was a delight. I hope you feel better. Thank you so much.
Thanks. I'm sorry my voice went out a couple times there, but
that's fine. No, thank you for coming on. It's a pure delight, and I'm going to definitely get your other book about forgiveness.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Patrick. Have a great day. Thank you, and goodbye, everyone.